The Great Pyramid of Giza, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, the Statue of Zeus at Olympia, the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus, the Mausoleum at Hyrcanus, the Colossus of Rhodes, and the Lighthouse of Alexandria. They're what most people consider to be the seven wonders of the ancient world. And then there are many more that people call wonders of the modern world. The Great Wall of China, Machu Picchu, the Pagoda Palace, Hoover Dam, the Golden Gate Bridge. So many things that people have built. So many feats of engineering. So many things that people have constructed to make a name for themselves or to remember something by. Back in the summer, I was at Gettysburg, one of the most famous battlefields in the world. And it's filled with monuments, with columns, small buildings, statues. Even at over here, just down the road at Vicksburg, we see monuments. And that's what I want us to consider tonight, is monuments. But not consider what sort of stone statue we can build, what sort of bronze plaque we can put up, but consider what sort of monument we build with our life. Consider how are we doing building our monument. We just named many monuments, many great wonders, and they're very impressive. But especially considering those wonders of the ancient world, they're all gone, except for the Great Pyramid, and even it is just ruins. Its cladding stripped off, its topper gone. It has a McDonald's built beside it. It's ruins. And the others are gone, things that we only have references to references of. But as Christians, we're to put our effort into building monuments that can build faith in others. Look to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, who is in heaven. As Christians, we are to work at doing things that instill faith in others. Put our effort, our time, and our life into doing that work of building things that put faith into the lives of others. And a lot of the things I say tonight might perhaps be more particularly directed towards parents, but I really want us to think of it in a more general sense, not just in the way that a father or a mother leaves things for their child, but in the way that we, as a people, as a generation, leave things to the people who will come after us, whether it's your younger brother, your younger sister, your grandchildren, or just someone younger that you know. Because I'm sure for all of us that our parents and our grandparents have had a great deal of impact and influence in our lives, in our faith, but also there are other people who aren't related to you actually, but I'm sure you might consider them a father or a mother of your faith. People who had great impact on your life. Look to 2 Timothy. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 1. The greatest opportunity that we have is the opportunity to help people take their hearts and mold it into something that is pleasing to God. Mold it into the image of God. We can look at God's character, the kind of example that He sets for us, and we can see that someone who has genuine faith will have the kind of character, the kind of works, and follow the kind of teaching of God. And so for us to be able to help instill faith in others, the best thing that we can do is have a genuine faith ourselves. 2 Timothy 1, verse 5. For I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am sure that is in you as well. Paul was writing this to Timothy. Timothy's grandmother, his mother, they had that faith with themselves, and they taught it to Timothy. They instilled it in Timothy. They built that faith for Timothy in a way. It was his own faith, and he had to make it his own. But we see that there was a great deal of credit to be given to his grandmother and his mother. And God gives us opportunities. Look back to the book of Joshua. Book of Joshua, chapter 4. And consider when the children of Israel crossed the Jordan. Joshua chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Now when all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, Take for yourselves men from the people, one man from each tribe, and command them, saying, Take up for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet are standing firm, and carry them over with you, and lay them down in the lodging place where you will lodge tonight. So Joshua called the 12 men who he had appointed from all the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, Cross again to the ark of the Lord, your God, in the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the sons of Israel. Let this be a sign among you, so that when your children ask later, saying, What do these stones mean to you? Then you shall say to them, Because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, when it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever. Thus the sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, just as the Lord spoke to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. And they carried them over with them to the lodging place and put them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing. And they are there to this day. Those men of Israel were commanded to build this monument. And it was a monument so they could teach their children, so they could teach the people who were coming after them, they could teach them about God and about what God had done, about God's power, about God's might. Those stones were there for them to instill faith in their children and their children's children. And again, if we look down to verse 21, we'll see that Joshua reminds them of this opportunity again. Joshua 4, verse 20. Those 12 stones which they had taken from Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. He said to the sons of Israel, When your children ask their fathers in the time to come, saying, What are these stones? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to this Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. That's what they were commanded to do. That's what they were supposed to do. To put that faith, to teach that faith to their children. But if we consider the history of the children of Israel, we see that they may have done that for a while. But they didn't continue to do that. They didn't do it like they needed to. We see over and over again that there would come a generation that would know not God. There would come people who didn't know the power of the Lord. There would come a generation that didn't have faith in God. And that monument that they built, it's gone now. It's not there anymore. Because they didn't do what they needed to with it. They didn't use it to remember the power of God and the faithfulness of God. Look over to Deuteronomy 6:6. We see that God doesn't just want us to build piles of rocks. The point of Joshua commanding them to do that was not so that there would be a pile of rocks, but the point was so that they would teach the children. But look what God says in Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. They weren't supposed to just teach the children once a week. You know, they weren't just to take their kids to Sunday morning church and that's how they taught their kids. It was to be every day when they went to bed, when they rose up, when they were sitting, when they were walking. You might call it building a lot of small monuments. And probably most of us can remember our parents, or our grandparents, the people that we cared about, the people that cared about us, doing those same sorts of things. Reading the Bible to us, teaching us about God, instructing us in God's ways. I know the first thing that my dad ever read me was the Gospel of John. When I was still in the womb, he read the Gospel of John to me. I'm sure that's the case for many of you. Is the people that came before you cared enough about you to begin, when you were even a baby, teaching you about God. In monuments, when we're teaching others about faith, trying to instill faith in others, trying to teach others what they need to do, we need to remember not to neglect what we're supposed to do. One of the monuments, one of the remembrances that we observe every week is the Lord's Supper. Turn to 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11, 24. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this, as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." We need to remember that this memorial supper, the Lord's Supper, it's for us to remember Christ's death. And when we remember Christ's death, we should be moved to help others to see Christ's death and remember his death. And really, when you're trying to get people to follow God, to instill faith in them, what it really is, it's a battle for their heart. And when we look back at the children of Israel, we see that their heart was not following after God. And we see that their fathers didn't teach their children about God. At the very close of the Old Testament, the very last few words in the book of Malachi, it reads, "Remember the law of Moses, my servant, even the statutes and ordinances which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel. Behold, I am going to send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. He will restore the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, so that I will not come and smite the land with a curse." As people, both as parents and as people that have cares for others, as people that others look up to, and someone's always looking up to you, no matter if you know they are, think they are or not, someone always is. We have a responsibility to instill faith in their hearts, and to be involved in their lives. You'll know of children who have an awards day at school, some other sort of, something that's important to them, and their parents aren't there. There's no one there that those children feel like care for them. No one there to be there, to share in their joy. And that's sad. So we need to make sure that we're involved with other people, involved in encouraging other people and helping other people. We talked about Titus earlier. Consider again his mother. And Titus, or we talked about Timothy, but now consider Titus. Titus chapter 2, verse 3. Older women likewise be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. It's not just men, not just fathers who get to take the forefront and do this and do that and do the other. I know sometimes women feel like they can't get up and lead scene. They can't get up and preach. They can't get up and lead a prayer. And it's good they feel that way because they're not supposed to. But there's so much other things they can do. Things that are so vitally important. Things like teaching the future generations about God, about being sensible, pure, being kind. And that's so important. And no woman should ever feel unimportant because they can't get up at the pulpit. Because the work that they're given to do is vital to building faith. It's a blessing if we succeed in teaching others and instilling faith in others. It will be a blessing. Turn to Psalm 103. The 103rd Psalm, beginning in verse 13. Just as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he himself knows our frame. He is mindful that we are but dust. As for man, his days are like grass. As a flower of the field, so he flourishes. When the wind has passed over it, it is no more, and its place acknowledges it no longer. But the loving kindness of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children, to those who keep his covenant and remember his precepts to do them. The things we build, the money we make, the houses we have, the cars we drive, one day it's going to be rotted wood, rusted metal. It'll be gone. Just like those monuments we talked about, they'll be gone. And if there is anything left, it will be ruins that no one knows you for. They might see the thing, but they won't know about you. And they won't care about you. But the things of faith that you leave to your children and to the people that look up to you, the people that come after you, that will be what endures. That's what's important. Look over Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 6. Grandchildren are the crown of old men, and the glory of sons is their fathers. The things that we can be proud of, like I've just said, it's not our car, not our house, but our children and our fathers. Be proud of them that they're following Christ, that they love God, and that they have a faith in God. And we'll be blessed if we succeed in that. And I know that if we fail to instill faith in others, that it will be a burden on us and be a burden on our hearts, and that every day we'll feel that weight on us for not teaching people like we should have. And so we have opportunities, and we have to take them. We can't be blind to the reality and just take an easy path and think that everything will just work out, it'll be fine. We won't always have opportunities, and we have to take them while we do have them. What we do today is what matters. You'll have opportunities. If a child asks you a question, why do we do this? Or why don't we do this? Just like the children of Israel, those rocks were to ask, for their children to ask, what are these rocks for? If someone asks, a child asks, you know, why do we take the Lord's Supper? Then you can tell them. When they're examples, tell them why those are good examples, or tell them why it's a bad example. We have to seek wisdom to know when there's an opportunity there and to know how to best use that opportunity. We have to be ready to open that door and to use the opportunity when it comes. Because there will come a time when there are no more opportunities left. In Luke 14, Christ speaks of building a tower. Verse 25. Now large crowds were going along with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who observe it begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. We have to count the cost of building our tower, building a memorial to build faith in others. We have to have faith ourselves in God to build and instill it in others. We have to make following God, following the Lord, we have to make that our passion. And we have to be interested and involved in other people's lives. We can't be hermits who hide away. It might be easier sometimes. We have to be involved in the lives of our children and in those that we wish to influence. And we have to be a listener and be teachable. We ourselves have to be willing to learn. We have to be willing to listen to others. Listen to our children, those that look up to us, and communicate with them. We have to make the example of loving God and loving His Word a major part of our time together. If we spend all our time talking about football, baseball, whatever, that's good things to spend time together with, but it can't be all the time. We have to make the majority of our time, the majority of our relationship be built off the love of God, the love of His Word. We can't be the kind of people who ask the questions, well, you know, how many church services do I really have to attend? Can I just come on Sunday morning? Can I just come on Sunday night? I can skip Wednesday, right? That sort of attitude is not the kind of attitude that builds others up and that instills the love of God and that instills the faith in others. We have to let others see that our relationship with God and our relationship with His people is our joy. There's a song in our songbook, I forget the number now, but it has the words, you never mentioned Him to me. We can go through our lives filling it up with talking to other people about sports, about politics, about so much, but so often we never end up talking about what our greatest joy should be, our greatest interest. So often we never end up talking about the Lord. and we need to change that. Christ has made an invitation, the gospel invitation, to come and be baptized. This morning, Brother Leonard talked about that. He talked about the purpose of it. And before we can begin to instill faith in others, to build others up, we have to be followers of Christ ourselves. And if there's anything we can do tonight, anything at all to help you, if you need to become a child of God, whatever we can do, we'd love to help you now. If we can, please come while we stand and sing.